from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
A group of Catholic scholars have written a controversial open letter making the claim that Pope Francis has taught heresy. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register Senior Editor Joan Frawley Desmond about the open letter and the strong reactions it provoked. And then we are joined by Register contributor Katie Warner about a series of interviews with priests about their mothers. And that's talking both about their earthly mothers and our Heavenly Mother Mary. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio. Hi, Matthew.
Good to be with you.
So, Matthew, this week has been a very interesting week in the world of Catholic media. The Catholic social media world especially has been on fire about this 20-page letter written by scholars about Pope Francis and accusing him of, and I quote, the canonical delict of heresy. And they're urging the bishops of the world to take action to deal with this grave situation, as they call it, of a heretical pope. So among the original 19 signers is a well-known and well-respected theologian, Dominican theologian, Father Aidan Nichols. The Register's reached out to Father Nichols to get his comments on why he signed the letter, but we weren't able to get a response. But Joan Frawley Desmond, our senior editor, has gotten many people on the record about the letter. Joan's with us to discuss it. Joan, thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Jeanette and Matthew.
So, Joan, you wrote the Register story called Papal Heresy Open Letter, Was It a Bridge Too Far? And really, this article points to the controversy, the division that this has shooken up. The division has been there, obviously, for quite some time. But this really brought it all really out in the open. And it's a skirmish, especially on social media. It's not the first time that many of these scholars who signed the letter have written something claiming, making very serious claims. This has been a long process. So tell us a little bit about the process of the letter and how we got to this point.
All right. Well, Jeanette, this is this really goes back to 2016, to the Pope issuing his apostolic exhortation, Amoris Laetitia. And in some of my email exchanges with people who signed the letter, you know, they're concerned about the synod that preceded the letter, even issues related to charges that synod was rigged. So you have this feeling, this very unsettled feeling that people feel that Catholic teaching on central issues regarding sexual morality, other issues are under assault from the very authority that they believe, or if not assault, perhaps is too strong a word, but has been undermined or weakened or challenged in some direct or indirect way from the very authority that they look to for that support, which is the Holy Father. And so Amoris Laetitia and concerns about ambiguous language in there, which have led already some to suggest that the communion can be given to those who are divorced and civilly remarried without annulment, to justify same-sex unions. It's raised questions about whether people can be in what would objectively be a state of mortal sin and yet actually be in conformity with church teaching and able to receive the Eucharist. Some of these points are very technical,
right,
but they've raised very, very strong concerns from people, and it started with the dubia with four cardinals, including our U.S. Cardinal Burke. But then it went on to a 2017 filial correction.
Right.
And a lot of the same people who wrote this most recent letter, raising questions about the Pope and heresy, also wrote that letter articulating similar concerns.
So one of the things we did is we went back to that letter. I mean, the original scholars of that filial correction were about 62 scholars. But they put it out there for many people to sign. So it was, you know, afterwards they put it online and people could sign. It went, I think, to thousands of people who signed that filial correction. I don't know the exact number. This open letter originated with 19 signatories. And I think, again, it has collected other signers. So there is certainly something, this strikes a chord with people. People agree that there is a problem regarding the teaching of this papacy. But not everybody agrees that calling it heresy is the right approach. So, Joan, when you spoke to people about this means of correcting the issues, what did people say?
I think they felt a couple of things, Jeanette. I would divide it into two camps: those who said they had not made the case for heresy, which just to be clear is very tricky for two reasons. One is the charge of heresy is a technical charge. It is not easy to prove. There's another term called material heresy, where you might say, well, I don't like this, and this seems very problematic, and something else seems problematic. Well, all of that might be problematic, but it doesn't add up or it doesn't support this legal technical term of heresy. Then you have issues related to whether this was bad tactically. Mm-hmm. In other words, if the goal, as the signer said, is to do two things, first to clarify church teaching and to inspire the bishops of the world to defend this teaching and to ask the Pope to clarify the teaching and, if necessary, as they say, abjure the path he has been on. So they want something very specific from the bishops and a lot of people who might otherwise share their concerns about doctrinal ambiguity are saying, if this is what you want, this is not going to produce the desired outcome.
Sure. One of the signers, I mentioned in our introduction that we tried to reach out to the most well-known, and that's Father Aidan Nichols. But we also reached out to someone, an American signer. It was Professor John Rist. He is a philosophy professor at Catholic University of America in Washington. And he was unapologetic about signing this letter. He firmly believed it needed to be done. Why did he feel it was important to take this very extreme step of saying that the Pope is heretical?
He said two things. He said he didn't think he had any other option. He didn't see other options on the table. And in particular, as I mentioned earlier about that history with the 2016 dubia, which was never satisfactorily answered, and then the fraternal correction, he said, you know, the dubia wasn't answered. He considered that to be really unacceptable. And so he said, my own decision to sign the new document was partly based on the total unwillingness of the Pope to reply to the dubia of the four cardinals. He said that refusal, in his mind, in his words, he said that refusal suggested to me that he could not clarify his views mm-hmm. without indicating the difference of his position from the traditional teaching of the purse of the church. From the traditional teaching of the church. So, Rift is saying that he actually doesn't think the Pope can effectively respond to this. So in a way, that's a separate issue, but that's what he's saying. And he's now ready to escalate and go further than that. What is interesting is that while others have also justified their decisions in online posts since this whole provoked a furor, we've also had other people like Janet Smith, Phil Lawler, both of whom have been associated with very strong concerns and questions about Amoris Laetitia, among other things, both questioning this fact, not disputing the problems, but saying, if you think this is going to produce this outcome, you know, you're wrong, and it could make things worse. I think that was one of the very striking points I thought about this as well.
Right, and another person who made that point was Father Wynandi in writing for First Things, and he was for a long time head of the theology department, if you will. I don't remember his exact title at the moment, at the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops. So this is Father Thomas Wynandi, a great theologian who wrote at First Things in a piece, "Is Pope Francis a Heretic?" was his, the strong title of his piece. And he felt that this letter went too far. But he himself is someone who has expressed grave concerns with Pope Francis and what he has taught, but he felt like things did not rise to this level, and that this would many people who we spoke to said they were afraid that this would this letter would make the divisions further, and the people that Pope Francis listens to, his advisors, would be able to very quickly say, oh, they are in the camp of, you know, the people who think you're a heretic, so you don't need to listen to them. You know, that
I think Jeanette, that's one of the really striking parts, is the divisions first more broadly in the church, and this mistrust, like it's impossible to have a serious debate without being framed and demonized, that came through very strongly. Didn't you notice that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I think it was Father Wynandi that said is, you know, this letter doesn't make the distinction that sometimes it's the people around the Pope who have actually committed heresy. And that needs to be recognized. And maybe the Pope has not, certainly the Pope has not gone far enough to correct that. But this is only going to exacerbate that problem, because those people still have a fair hearing from the Pope. But will the people speaking truth now have a fair hearing, because they're going to be categorized among this apparently extreme camp? So it's serious, yeah. Serious stuff. We're completely out of time, and this is such an important topic. I invite all of our listeners to read the story that we have online on this. I have to say, I feel like it's one of the fairest treatments, because it really lets both sides have their say. Our story is called "Papal Heresy Open Letter: Was It a Bridge Too Far?" We published it on May 8th, and you should easily be able to find it at ncregister.com. When we come back, we'll be talking about Mother's Day. Joan, happy Mother's Day.
Same to you, Jeanette. You're a pretty new mother, too. So
thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations to you.
Thanks. When we come back, Matthew and I talk to Katie Warner about her interviews with six priests who share their love of moms. This is Register Radio on EWTN. Stay tuned.
This Easter season, read for faith, read for truth, read for life by giving yourself the gift of EWTN's National Catholic Register. Easter inaugurates a joyous season of hope and renewal that brings us closer to God. Gain a deeper understanding of His love and providence in reading the Register. Make this Easter season even more meaningful. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get your six free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel. Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN. Visit today.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms who are listening. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host, along with Matthew Bunsen of this show, Register Radio. Matthew's joining me from Washington, D.C., and And Matthew, I'm going to let you jump in this time because the last part of the show, I didn't even let you have a word in edgewise.
No, it was fun. I was just enjoying listening to the conversation. It was really good.
So I'm really happy to move from that topic, that very heavy topic, to this topic of mothers. That conversation was about the division in the church, and right now we need to pray for Holy Mother Church. She needs our prayers. But joining us to talk about a blog series that she did at ncregister.com is Katie Warner. Katie is a stay-at-home mom, a writer, a speaker, and an evangelist. She's the author of the book Head and Heart, Becoming Spiritual Leaders for Your Family. And more about her can be found, and her writings can be found at her website, katiewarner.com. That's Katie, KatieWarner.com. But also you can find Katie's writings at ncregister.com, where she blogs. She's been writing for us for several years. Katie, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you guys so much for having me on the show today. It's a blessing to be with you.
Absolutely. A blessing to have you away from your two little ones for a few moments to talk. So, Katie, you did a great interview for Mother's Day about six priests. That sounds kind of strange that we're talking to you about a series about six priests for Mother's Day, but audience, when you read these interviews, you'll know why. So what inspired these interviews with priests?
Right. So, you know, all of our vocations, whatever those vocations may be for each of us, are so influenced by our mothers. And mothers have such a tremendous impact on the upbringing and the futures of their children, especially on their faith lives. And as I was just kind of reflecting on moms and the role that they play in their kids' lives, I just came across a quote by St. Pius X, who says that every vocation to the priesthood comes from the heart of God, but it passes through the heart of a mother. And that just really struck me, and it made me really eager to talk to some priests and to hear from them, you know, right around Mother's Day about their own moms, you know, these men who have such a unique vocation of being in persona Christi. I wanted to talk to them about their moms, the impact that their moms had on their faith and on their vocations, and then also about their relationship with the Heavenly Mother,
right.
You know, their Heavenly Mother, the Blessed Mother, which actually turned out to be probably one of my favorite parts of the interview. And then in addition to that, I kind of just wanted to give these priests a chance to brag about their moms on the register a little bit, because I thought that would be a sweet gift for their moms for Mother's Day this year.
Absolutely. And why did you choose six priests? Why did you choose these six priests?
Well, some of them are personal friends, and then also I reached out to some of my network and asked them to, you know, send me some names of priests that they knew that had very strong relationships with their moms, and specifically had learned a lot from their moms, and their moms had a role in their life that really kind of helped foster that vocation. So I probably could have had dozens and dozens of them if I continued, you know, working on the series. Because as their responses rolled in, I was just so touched by the stories that they had to share, and even some little humorous quips here and there, and just kind of really moved by the example that their mothers had. And as a mom of three kids myself, and one of them's a boy, you know, I also kind of just selfishly wanted to know, what are these moms doing right to be able to raise children who give themselves to Christ and His church in such a profound way?
Well, we have these mothers who are so influential in the faith lives of their sons. And one of the most interesting part of the interviews that you did were how their relationship was such that they went to their moms first, or that they felt comfortable enough to go to her to tell her about their call to the priesthood. So what were some of the highlights in each of these relationships, and what really jumped out to you?
Right. So I had, oh my goodness, there are so many little tidbits that I loved. One of the funny stories that got to me was from Father Michael Brisson, who talked about how his mom, you know, kind of led this example of faith in everyday life, but also passed on these little bits of invaluable wisdom too. Like when he was a boy, his mom came in his room and found him praying the rosary, and he was saying the Our Father on the small beads and the Hail Mary on the big ones. And he was just thinking that the rosary was so painfully long. and his mother was able to gently correct him and help kind of recover, help him recover from what turned out to be a very, very long recitation of the rosary. So just kind of going along and hearing little stories like that. So, you know, these moms who are, you know, just teaching their children lessons by their life, but also in the little ways. Father Joseph Kelly talked about his mom's very quiet but clear example of the faith in everyday living. He remembers her putting holy cards of her patroness, St. Therese of Lisieux, in places around their home growing up. And as he grew up, he kind of noticed, you know, my mom is actually living the little way in the way that she's raising her family. And so that really struck me, too, is, you know, just the way that mothers can, without even, you know, very, very clearly and expressly in a verbal way, hand on the faith to their children. They also just do it by the way they're living their life. You know, so much of a mom's life is just doing those little things for God, whether it's chores or feeding your children or, you know, whatever those little things are. He was able to kind of notice the saintly impression that she was making on him that helped him grow in holiness as he was growing up too. And then even some funny stories in the series were some of the things I enjoyed. Back to Father Michael Brisson, he talked about his mom's comment after he told her that he was joining the Legionaries of Christ. She said, "Oh, I thought if you were going to be a priest, you would be a diocesan priest because that way you could go skiing." That's a very strange comment. And over time, he kind of came to realize that she was just a little bit sad that he was going to be leaving and going so far from home, potentially. But at the same time, was very supportive of his vocation. So you get to see the you know, sanctity kind of growing in these mothers, but also their humanity as a lot of these priests kind of came to recognize their vocations and share them with their moms.
I love, though, how you ask about the relationships with their mothers, but then you also ask, and the key word there, relationship with the Blessed Mother, because that's what we're really called to have.
Right. You know, I kind of realized quickly that it was sort of a given that these holy priests would have a strong relationship with their Blessed Mother, too. But what I really enjoyed, because I think a lot of us lay people can relate to this, too, is that some priests, that relationship came really naturally. You know, Father Michael Brisson talked about how he knew Mary before he knew Jesus. And Father Joseph Kelly talked about how Mary had accompanied him on every step of his vocation, with his first Mass even being offered on the Feast of Our Lady's Immaculate Heart. But then for others, it was more of a progression. Father Anthony Sortino talked about how when he was 15 years old, he said to Mary, "I love your son a lot even, but I'm not sure why or how to have a relationship with you. Please show me." And just in offering that, you know, prayer to the Blessed Mother, she came in a powerful way into his life to show him how a mother's love can draw us closer to the heart of Jesus. And then after that, he made a Marian consecration and has grown in his relationship with the Blessed Mother ever since. So I found that really consoling to read these different priests and how they kind of came to have that strong relationship with the Blessed Mother. There's a beautiful image that Father Brendan Rowland brought up in his interview about how his favorite image of Mary is where her cloak is stretched out around all people she is protecting. So as they talked about both their moms and the Blessed Mother, I saw kind of these repeating themes and traits that they noticed about both their moms and the Blessed Mother, whether that's, you know, sacrifice, charity, devotion to the Eucharist, forgiveness, care, protection, gentleness, compassion. It's all of those kind of feelings that hopefully most of us conjure up when we think about our moms and how they were able to see their mom's lives, you know, reflected in the virtues of the Blessed Mother and vice versa. And I just found that really beautiful, too.
And it's also striking to see the relationship between the mothers and our Mother Mary. I think that that's a beautiful thing that comes out in each of these interviews is that relationship. The same priest that you just mentioned, Father Brendan Rowling, he says his favorite image of his mother is of her, or memorable image of his mother is of her in the early mornings. Her, not in the mornings, but her watching the bird and the deer outside of the double window in her chair, you know, praying the rosary. And you know, that's a beautiful image. And I certainly remember my mom, a lovely image of her, you know, nursing one of my siblings, praying the rosary, and how much that is like an image of the Blessed Mother, you know, who must have done the same with our Lord. Just amazing thought, you know. I love
right,
also. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, jump in, Katie.
I was going to say it kind of encourages us, you know, those of us who are parents in particular, to do those things, to have those, you know, devotions be shown in even in a quiet way in front of our children. You
Absolutely.
Know, like when we're waking up in the morning or in the evening, to have a Bible occasionally out reading it, not necessarily to our kids, which we should do as well, but also just on our own so our kids can see us reading the Bible, can see us praying the rosary, because it makes an impression on them that's lasting and can even plant seeds of a vocation that we may not even realize we're having that kind of an effect on them at the time, and
Absolutely.
Only realize later, you know, the power that simple devotion had on their life.
Absolutely. My experience has been that way. I mean, I remember my mom and my dad, you know, praying every morning with the Bible and with the rosary. I mean, it's a distinct memory that's etched in me and encourages me to do the same. Matthew, knowing just a bit about your relationship with your mother, I mean, I think she's the reason why you are a theologian. I mean, she worked for the church.
She did. I literally grew up in a chancery office, and she was a convert herself, and had a particular devotion to the Blessed Mother, as many, many converts do. But also a very realistic understanding of the way the church worked. And I think that's one of the reasons in what I do, I'm able to at least balance dealing with all these crises with a broader perspective of the beauty of the church.
Katie, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this beautiful topic of our mothers and our Mother Mary. We hope you continue to write these inspirational stories for the Register.
Oh, well, it's entirely my pleasure, and I give all credit to these wonderful priests and just the beautiful insights they had to share about their moms and the Blessed Mother. So I hope readers enjoy it.
So you can find Katie's writings at ncregister.com, and you can find this series that's Through a Mother's Heart. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
I don't have all the answers, and I don't understand the Bible. That's why I'm so thankful for EWTN.
Helping you to stay prepared for God's call. We must always be ready. This is the EWTN Radio Network.